Welcome. This is Jean Maroney of Thinking Directions. And today we are having a class on how to get results on your long-term objective. Now, this is the Holy Grail, right? The assumption is that you have a long-term objective that is challenging in some way. It's not obvious. It's time-consuming. That's why it's a long-range goal. It's slightly frustrating, perhaps, because you're not necessarily seeing progress. You're not necessarily getting results now. And this could be in any major area of life. I'm just going to bat through five major areas of life. Could be in your career. Maybe you're thinking about changing careers and you're trying to figure out how you're going to do that and even make the change. That is a big long-term undertaking, and it can be stalled for a while when you just know I need something different, but what are you going to do? Maybe it's in finances. Actually, I just had a conversation with Tal Svani, and he convinced me that career and finances are two separate major goal areas. I think that's really right. Maybe you want to have, you have a company and you want your company to be 10 times the size it is. Or maybe you want your income to be 10 times the amount it is. Or maybe you just want your savings to be 10 times the amount they are. Those are all big goals, but it can be hard to see how to make that happen in the short term. It's a long-term goal. How do you get results on it? Relationships. So we've got career, finances, relationships. Repairing a relationship. This is something that doesn't happen overnight. If you've had a break with someone and then tried to repair it or wanted to repair it, it's something that happens gradually over a period of time. How do you actually make forward progress on that? Recreation. I have a long-term goal of becoming a 4.0 tennis player. Now, you have to understand that prior to age, I believe, 54, I had never aspired to be an athlete on, you know, in any sport whatsoever. And so I've had to learn from the ground up how to run, which I didn't know how to do, how to hit, which I couldn't do, how to catch, how to throw, all these things I've been learning here in my 50s. And I'm nowhere close to it. A 4.0 tennis player is not just someone who can play games, but someone who's actually pretty good. And, but, you know, not super. But anyway, it's a dream for me. Here's another kind of long-range goal. Stop wanting to overeat. If you have a dieting, if you have a weight loss issue, one of the best ways to lose weight is to stop wanting to eat the extra food. How do you do that? I mean, this is a personal, you know, personal wellness, well-being, health and wellness thing, which really requires changing your value hierarchy. It's a long-term thing. All of these, the nature of a really long-term objective is that you're not really expecting to get results in the short term. So why am I saying you can get results now? Well, I think paradoxically, you actually need to be seeing results in the short term in order to get these long-term, achieve these long-term objectives. If you were absolutely sure it was inevitable that you were eventually going to get to this long-term goal, you probably wouldn't be here in the class wanting to know how to get results now. So for example, if you're 21 years old and you're saving 6% of your salary every year, you know, you can just track it out. By the time you're 85, your savings are going to be huge. And it's kind of inevitable, and it's just something that happens in the background, and you aren't really worried about that. You just keep doing the thing you need to do in the short term. It's like you're patiently putting in the time. Actually, that's where I am right now with tennis. I don't know how long it's going to take for me to be a 4.0, but I'm not feeling impatient about that at all. I'm actually right now really focusing on form, because the most important thing for me is that I don't injure myself when I play tennis, because I am now, whatever, 57 years old, and injury is the biggest risk to my ever becoming a 4.0 player. So I'm just really focused on form and having fun. And I, at some point later, may need to put in a push to become more athletic, but you know, right now it's basically, I'm just working away at it. I'm not focused on getting results now because I see it's eventually going to happen. So these two cases that I just gave, use the obvious advice. If you want to get results, you need to, on a long-term objective, you need to work on it on a regular basis. If not every day, then every week. It's consistent action that's going to get you that long-term result. It's that consistent action in the short term that gets you the long-term result. That's the obvious advice. If you guys didn't know that, great. I'm glad to have shared it with you. I'm kind of assuming that everybody on the call sort of thinks that's obvious and am glad that I've already said that and I'm going to go on to the next thing. Because I really want to focus on the non-obvious advice. The non-obvious advice is that in order to get that short-term action to really lead to the long-term results, to be able to consistently do that short-term action, you need to have certain things in place for it. You need to be, first of all, you need to have made the space in your life in order to put in the effort in the short term. Like, I need to actually be showing up at tennis, you know, a couple of times a week, at least, say. And that takes time. That takes time. So that's one thing. You have to actually make the time to put in the effort. Second thing is you need to see the payoff. And I would say at a minimum, you need to see some kind of results on a weekly basis that are satisfying to you, that are going to make you want to put in that effort again next week. It doesn't have to be every single day, but I would say ideally on a daily basis, but certainly on a weekly basis, you need to see that this short-term effort is actually paying off in some way. And that is what is going to motivate you to put in that effort over the long haul. That is going to make you confident that you can sustain this effort as long as it takes to achieve the goal. So this is what I call, well, not just me, this is a virtuous cycle. And I'm just sharing a quick picture. What you need to set up in order to achieve a long-term goal is set up a virtuous cycle so that you put in a doable effort. It leads to some significant success that's significant by your standard. You have to actually think that you're getting something good out of this. And that is what is going to create the natural motivation to go put in more doable effort. And I would say that any long-term objective that you want to achieve, you need to make sure you create this kind of a virtuous cycle of effort. Now, this is not the easiest thing in the world to do. There are really three major skills you need. And we're going to talk about these briefly. Well, I'll tell you what the three skills are first. First of all, you need to know how to set up. You need to basically set an initiative to set up to get this cycle started. These cycles don't start on themselves. It takes a little burst of effort to get one of these virtuous cycles going. Then throughout the whatever it is, if it's a multi-year process, you need to continuously set new goals, every one of which motivates you to act. That is something that is continuing again and again and again throughout the process. And then finally, the third thing that you need to be able to do, you've carved out the time, you have a goal that motivates, doesn't necessarily mean that when you get to the time to do the action, you feel like doing it. There's all kinds of things. I mean, inertia is the default, right? If you say that you're going to work, you're going to get up early tomorrow morning and work out, if you're putting workouts into your life. Are you going to feel like that when you wake up tomorrow morning, or are you going to want to stay in bed? It is not the case that you can just make a decision and then be motivated at a future time. You also need skills to be able to marshal that motivation at the time that you need it, at the time you said you were going to do it. So these are major skills. I have to tell you, you're not going to learn these skills in a 1-hour class. Right? I want to set some expectations here. What we're going to do today is I'm going to explain the concepts involved in each of these, just like the top concept for each of these three skills, because each of them is really like a 6-hour class. I mean, to explain it in detail, these are classes that I've given. I'll tell you what the classes are. They're all in the Thinking Lab, and they're all included in my Launch 21 class that's starting on Saturday. But the goal for this class is to explain the concept, explain the skill briefly, so that you can see, yes, this is possible. It is absolutely possible for me to get a virtuous cycle going. It is absolutely possible for me to consistently set new goals that are going to motivate me to basically ramp up to the final goal. Yes, it is possible for me to motivate myself, marshal that motivation at the time I need it. And that's where the goal is for the theory part of tonight. What we're going to do after that is then have, we're going to do an exercise. What I'm hoping is that just getting the concept is going to help you with your major objective. And so we're going to do an exercise. There were two handouts. One was on goal setting 101, and the other one is on the tactic want, maybe. And we're going to be actually doing an exercise on want, maybe. The idea of that is you're going to be thinking about some objective you want to achieve, some goal you want to achieve, and thinking about how you can maybe set up this virtuous cycle. And then you have a chance to ask questions. So maybe you're going to be able to figure it out just with a few concepts, or maybe you would like some help. And so the last part of this class will be Q&A, which is really two things, coaching and consulting. And I think it's helpful to know the difference between these two things. Coaching is if your thinking is getting in the way, like if you're thinking I can't, or I have to, or I don't know, coaching can help you see your own thinking and help you figure out how to untangle your own thinking, which is the only way to get out of that kind of thing. Coaching is not giving you advice. Consulting is giving you advice. Coaching is helping you see your own thinking and help you think through so you can figure out the problem yourself. And Lynn Zinser and I are actually both in training in a coaching methodology that we are very big on. And that's what I'm going to make sure we at least demonstrate that in one case in the Q&A, because I think it's so important. But you can also just ask questions for which you want to just get answers also. And that will be the consulting portion of the Q&A. My plan is that we will get to the Q&A. I'm hoping we're going to be able to start the Q&A about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, so that we can do at least one coaching thing in the main hour. And then I plan a 15-minute Q&A, but I'm willing to stay on longer. If there's a lot of Q&A, if there are a lot of people who would like coaching, we can stay on longer to do that. So that's the plan for today. I hope that you guys think that you're in the right place. So let me just take one pause for a word from our sponsor. This is a teaser class for my Launch 21 program, which starts March 6th, that Saturday. It starts on Thinking Day, which is in the Thinking Lab. And it is for people who want to launch an initiative, basically. It's an 8-week program. I'll tell you more about it towards the end, but the concepts that we're talking about here, we go into in much more depth in Launch 21. But let's get to the meat here. Okay. First skill that you need to be able to get the cycle started by defining an initiative. An initiative is a major goal that you set that will disrupt your routine or otherwise challenge your status quo. I think this is really important. If you were already patiently working toward the long-term goal and completely satisfied with how it was going, it means you don't need an initiative. It means you've already figured out how to make it be part of your life, you're confident it's gonna happen, all is good. If you're feeling like this long-term goal needs some work, it means that it's not fully integrated into your life. And I'll tell you what that means is you're going to run into difficulty getting started on it. It is either going to push some buttons, like maybe sometimes people have fear of success or fear of failure, and it really gets in the way of going after a major goal. Or maybe it's just that you haven't really committed to it yet. And in fact, you need to take some time. You need to make space for it in your current life. And there's going to be conflict over that. That means that there's something else that you're doing that you're not going to be doing. All of these things create emotional conflict. And I think it's very important to realize that when you're starting one of these projects, there is going to be emotional conflict. You need to expect it. You need to plan for it. You need to put in support to deal with it. And then at a certain point, you will get over the hump and things will be running fairly smoothly. And then you can have that be something that just ticks along without needing a lot of special attention. But there is a buildup process that you need to go through. And that's what I mean by an initiative. Now, it's an initiative per se. One of the things I recommend, this is the first thing we do in Launch 21, is help you figure out what your initiative is going to be. Really important to have only one initiative, meaning only one major goal you're working on that is pushing your buttons. I've tried this, guys, you know, a lot of my advice comes from, I have tried this. It does not work. You do not want to try this. Here's why. Here's what you want to do instead. When you have two initiatives, two things that are pushing your buttons, like, for example, just as an example from my life, working on a relationship issue and working on a book project that is challenging and pushes various buttons. If you have both of those things causing turmoil in your life at the same time, what happens is if one goes off, it knocks the other off, and suddenly you're just in a very emotional place. It's very difficult. It's difficult to just do the routine work. So part of what you need to do, and it makes it twice as hard to then get going on the long-term goal. So part of the thing you need to do is very strategically decide, where am I going to put my emotional energy right now? All the other objectives you have need to be put in some kind of maintenance mode. It doesn't mean that you can't work on a relationship and work on a book at the same time. It means that if you've decided that the relationship is the top priority, then the book needs to be in some maintenance mode where it's not going to cause a lot of problems. So for example, one way, like if you want the book to be pushing buttons, set a lot of deadlines. And then if you have trouble miss making the deadlines, it will push buttons and you'll have emotional stuff to work through. If you want it to be on maintenance, then you can have it be, well, I'm just going to put time on task, and have that time on task be relatively a small amount that you're sure you can consistently do, and that is probably not going to be that hard. There's always a way to adjust the work that you're doing so that it is either is pushing buttons or it's not pushing buttons. Now, I have to say that there's a particular skill here, which I think it is a skill, it's a learnable skill. All of these skills are learnable. But the skill that you need to learn is how to translate a goal that you've imagined in one way into another kind of goal that is less demanding. I mean, I mentioned one of those examples, a book goal, instead of being trying to get drafts done at a certain time, turn it into a certain number of hours a week. If it were, say, the company goal, or trying to 10X your company or 10X your income, that could be, you know, there's a lot of pressure to actually start getting money, and that could push your buttons. But something like setting up metrics so that you can see, like if it was our company, setting up metrics to figure out how do we actually get customers, that actually might be a lot less emotional and yet would still move you forward. Or for a new career, right? If you're trying to figure out a new career, one thing you could do that would not be a lot of pressure is just take a course. As opposed to something that may be more pressure is do a bunch of experiments, which might actually push your comfort zone in trying out different things that you might do. Now, it's really, I think it's partly understanding that this is possible. I think that the aha that I hope you'll have is that the fact that you've thought about how to achieve some long-range goal and you've got your idea about how to go at about it, that's just plan A. There are a gazillion different ways you could pursue that long-term goal. And part of my point here is that you need to be strategic about the how you go after it, and you need to make the how meet your mental needs. And if it's going to cause a lot of emotional upset, you need to actually adjust it so it will fit, basically moderate the work that you're doing so that you always have a sustainable path forward. Now, I give you a couple of hints about that in the handout on goal setting 101, which I'm actually not going to go through. I thought at one point I might go through it, but there's just too much, and I just want to get the highlights across. But this is one of the things we talk about in Launch 21. And the first thing you do is define an initiative, and you specifically do it. You figure out what you can focus on and how you can focus on it in a way that you can actually see results in 4 weeks, actually, and be able to sustain the effort during that time. And it's really, this is a totally learnable skill, but it's something that people often don't think about. They think, well, I know how to achieve this goal. This is what I need to do. And then they try to do step one and it doesn't go well. Well, then you need a different strategy for how to achieve it. You need a strategy that takes into account the other things you're doing, takes into account, make sure that this is the only initiative you have, and then also adjust the way that you go it, which gets us to the second major concept. In order to set goals that motivate, you need a skill, a concept I call planned evolution. Planned evolution. What do I mean by that? I mean, you know what evolution is, right? An organism evolves to meet a certain niche, right? And each time it gets more complicated and more specialized. What planned evolution is you start with a very simple version of whatever it is you're trying to create, and you plan to make various generations of it. You're going to evolve it into the big and wonderful thing that you're going to have. And the trick of this, the thing that is, again, a learnable skill, but really requires thinking about, is that you need to get the idea of what matters. And I think it's helpful. The way that I teach planned evolution, I'm going to share some pictures here. And I will put these slides in the folder after the class. You need to know what's important there. So like if you're drawing a painting, let me start this. If you're making a painting of a scene, the way that you normally do it is a process that's called layering, where you start with a sketch and then you brush in the colors across the whole thing. And then you put in the details, right? So in the picture that I'm showing, if you happen to be audio only and don't have the slides with you, the picture I'm showing is a little picture with a red house, with a green land, with some flowers, and with the sun and the blue sky. And it's a very simple picture. And yet there is a sense when you just have a line drawing of that, you have the whole picture. And you have like a sense, like for example, you can judge whether the composition is good just from a line sketch. You can get some of the aesthetic values just from a line sketch. And then when you put in the basic colors, it gets a whole bunch more life to it. It gets a lot more of the emotion. Once you get the basic colors in, it's still not a full picture, but it has a lot of the aesthetic values of the same value that you're going to get when you get the final picture that has all of the details across the whole. So what planned evolution does is it figures out what's that essential. And you figure out how to bring it in, because a sketch is really easy to do. That's good. You want the next goal to be easy and doable so you can just go after it. Once you have the sketch, it's not so hard to put in the colors in the various area. Good, that's what you want. Once you have that, then you can focus on one part at a time. Now, this layering approach, which is traditionally the way you do with painting, is not the only way that you can plan to evolve. The other basic way is what I call adding on. And just for simplicity, I'm going to show how you would do this with a painting. You would start, you'd have a blank canvas and you would just draw the house and you'd draw it in all its detail first. There's no ground and there's no sky. Now, the reason you don't do this in painting is it turns out that you really need to have the whole context because of the way that lighting is and stuff like that. So you wouldn't normally do this in a painting. But conceptually, there are a lot of things that you can do this way where you basically take a part, in this case, the house. If you had to choose between the sky, the land, and the house, and you wanted to draw a scaled down version of this drawing or this painting that you had, you wanted a scaled down version of it, you would pick the house. That would be the essential. And then if you wanted to add in more, the thing you'd add would be the ground. And then only last, you would add in the sky. Now, this is two different ways of thinking about how to take a project. You could make the same painting with either of these two processes. And in fact, you probably would use a mixture of the two. You probably would, depending on how you did it, you could do it either way. But having the mental flexibility to look at any project, and see how to scale it down to that slim bare bones thing that's either the one crucial part that gets you a lot of the value, or the sketch that gets you the whole picture. That is the critical skill of planned evolution. And this is a learning skill, learnable skill. I teach this in the Thinking Lab. It's a class called Just-in-Time Planning. And really, the skills that you need to do this are, first of all, you need to be able to turn on creative thinking on demand, because this is actually a very creative process. People think of goal setting as being just logical and analytical, but the truth is, in order to make the steps towards the goal to really work, you need to be very creative, because you need to take into account your particular skill, your particular interest, your particular context of knowledge. So that's part of what you need. The other thing is, you need to get very good at identifying the big value for you, right? Because a different person could have different priorities and would evolve in a different way. So for example, suppose someone was making a painting of a person. One painter might be interested in, say, the emotion of the whole thing. Like, so if some of you know Vermeer, there are, his paintings of people are always in a scene, and the whole scene actually brings the whole meaning to it. And the, you know, there's nothing wrong with his painting of the people, but the people, like, a lot of times the people are not the great work of art. It's the composition that's the great work of art, right? And I mean, there are a few that are portraits, but it's really about the scene and the setting of the scene. And I'm thinking of one called Laughing Girl, where there's a soldier and a laughing girl, and it's the interaction between the two of them, but it's not about the people in a certain way. It's about the whole situation. So if you were to plan to evolve that, the composition would be very important, and the clarifying where you wanted to have people look would be very important. It would be very much about the composition, and you probably start the standard painting way. Now, on the other hand, if you were painting something where what you really wanted to do was get better at anatomy, and that the critical thing was to have the beauty of this person, in which case anatomy matters, what you actually might do is start sketching the anatomy involved and do a whole bunch of practice sketches of the anatomy. And, you know, some of you have seen this, some of the great masters from the Renaissance, there are many sketches extant of the anatomy that they then put into their paintings, but they worked out exactly what the muscles were going to be and the position of the body. And it's a completely different kind of style than, say, a Vermeer type style. And what they needed to focus on in order to get the masterpiece was almost certainly different from what Vermeer needed to focus on to get his masterpiece. So I hope that that's not too abstract of a case, but what matters to you is how you figure out how to evolve, because the point is the early versions need to actually satisfy your value. They aren't just a means to an end. They are creating the value when you are seeing the value being created. And that's a mental switch that is absolutely a learnable skill, but is not obvious. Okay. The third major skill you need, be able to marshal your motivation. Now, this is something I've worked on a long time, and it's all distilled in the course I give called Do What Matters Most. I'll tell you, this is very influenced by my view of what motivation is. It's really a psychoepistemological view, if you know what that term is. I am really just looking at here in the moment. Motivation is the simple pushes and pulls that you feel toward action. In order to take a physical action, you must have an impulse to act, which is basically either a desire to get something, there's an object that you're feeling a desire toward, or an aversion to something, so there's an aversion to go away from something. And whether you and so one of the problems you can get into where you do goal setting and you say, oh, I'm going to do all these things. When it comes down to it, you're not actually aware right at this moment of something you want to go for. And so you don't get that impulse to act, one of the things I argue in Do What Matters Most is you should always use motivation by values, not motivation by threats. But whether you're motivated, putting that aside, whether you're motivated depends entirely on your awareness of the values at stake now. I mean, right now, the step I take right now is going to make a difference in my values. I see that I'm going to gain something this second. That is not intuitively obvious, and it's not always the case that you're aware of that. You may not have activated the context to be able to be aware of that. Or you may have some assumptions or conclusions or other knowledge that is, or other connections that are either obfuscating that or contradicting it or conflicting with it. And so you need to be able to, by means of turning your attention, get that value in your sights and activate that impulse. Because in fact, you cannot act without an impulse to act, and you need to know how to manage your mind in order to harness your own motivation to do the things that you intend to do for the long term. Now, I mean, you do this, I'm making this sound very abstract, but you do this in real life. I think in real life, there are three ways that people marshal their motivation. One is the just force yourself to do it, which the way you do that is you kind of reduce, you block out any conflicts and you narrow your focus to just the thing you're supposed to do. And I'm sure you all have forced yourself to do something by just putting on those blinders and doing it. Now, I don't recommend that. I have a whole explanation for why that gets you in trouble. Maybe it helped. Maybe you get to do it right now, but in the long run, it kills your long-term motivation because you learn to hate the task. But that is one way people try to do this. The second way people try to do this is by increasing their awareness of threats. So like if you procrastinate, if you start thinking about all the terrible things that are going to happen if you don't do this, there can be a jolt of fear that can push you into action. And this, you know, people will say fear works as a motivator. And I'm not disagreeing with that. But if you're trying to achieve a long-term objective, this is not going to sustain you long-term, because this is going to, again, it's going to put you, it's going to make it so you learn to dislike or fear working on the important task. And if it's far enough away, you're not actually going to be able to see. You're not going to be able to make yourself fear it. If it's a long-range goal, I think sometimes motivation by fear doesn't work for a long-range goal because the negative consequences are so long-range. If you think about people who don't save when they're in their 20s, it's so long range. Boy, when I'm 80, you can't even imagine that. They don't realize how upset they're going to be when they don't have, you know, a really big nest egg in the bank when they're 80 years old. the only thing that sustains you, the way that you can manage your motivation that really sustains you, is to increase awareness of the values at stake that you want to gain right now. And that is a skill. That is absolutely a skill. I teach it in Do What Matters Most. It's basically, it's four things. When you're feeling uncertain about what you should be doing, you're basically feeling some doubt about what you should be doing, you need to be able to make up your mind quickly. You need to be able to, in effect, step back, take control and say, okay, I'm going to take control and I'm going to move forward. And here's what forward means. And you need to be able to do that with a real confidence. If you feel temptation to do something else, you need to be able to give contrary motivation a fair hearing and find out if that temptation is really some real important thing that you need to pay attention to, or is it just the potato chips calling and it's just a way to escape whatever it is that you want to do, which you really need to do. And you need to be able to do that. You need to be able to do it quickly. So you need to be able to handle temptation. Inertia. Even if you are not being tempted to do something else, even if you see the value, there can be inertia to take that step. This happens for example, you think about it and you decide, you know, the best time, one of the things I recommend in the Launch 21 course, I send an email every day with what's intended to be about 15 minutes of thought work. The idea of this is you're doing some kind of meta level, high level thinking about how your initiative is going and how to troubleshoot any problems that are arising or celebrate your accomplishments. It's different every day for the 8 weeks. But you may have decided that the time to do this is when you first sit down at your desk. When you first sit down at your desk to do it on day one, you may be motivated, but on day five, you may not be motivated. You may, do I need to do this? You don't feel like it, right? The fact that you decided this is the best time doesn't mean you're going to feel like it at that instant. Well, you need skills. You need skills to be able to remind yourself, well, the reason for doing it now, like, for example, that particular thing, it's really great. If you do the thought work in the morning, it gets the day off on a good, if this is what works for you. It's different. Some people do it at night. I just want to be clear. But doing it first thing, suppose the reason you do it first thing, then you don't forget it. You get the day off on a good start. It puts your mind into focus. It makes sure you work on the initiative today. Those are good reasons, but they aren't going to necessarily be activated at, you know, 9 a.m. on Friday morning. And so you need to be able to, and you need to be able, by an act of will, to take a step to get over that hump. With the confidence, it's a hump, it's not a hill. It's a skill, it's in Do What Matters Most. Now, sometimes it's actually a hill. Sometimes it turns out when you get down there and you take that step, what happens is you get this wall of resistance, which is a huge alert. It means that you've got some contradictory motivation. You really have discovered some old baggage. Very important that you don't panic when that happens. This is, again, a normal thing that happens to everybody sometimes. How do you handle that? Well, the short version is you need to really give yourself permission to understand the feelings and find the values and reframe that. And I'm not going to go into the whole theory there, but basically I have this this theory of anti-values. You need to dissolve the anti-values. The thing that I teach, I think people make a big to-do about motivation. It's like, oh my God, I have a wrong premise, or oh, I have, you know, depression, or I have, you know, label here, right? Oh, I have this problem. That may be true, and that's something that you need to know about yourself, but you still have the power of volition. You still have the power to take action in the present. And what you just need to do is you need to make sure that the goals you're setting are appropriate so that you're taking steps that are in fact doable for you, but there is always a step in the right direction, no matter what baggage you've got. You just may need to move a little bit more slowly and with a little bit more self-care if you have some psychological baggage. It doesn't mean you can't pursue your long-term goal. And in fact, I believe that it's by pursuing a long-term goal and dealing with the conflicts and the baggage as it comes up in a very controlled way, in a very loving and gentle way, that you in fact untangle all this old baggage. I think that is the best way to untangle it, as opposed to, you know, the straw man is going to therapy and talk about your childhood for 20 years. A lot of people will tell you that doesn't do it. It's not, so anyway, I'm not going to go into my whole theory in that, but the thing I want to say is this idea, the concepts taught in Do What Matters Most about managing your motivation and moving toward the value at stake, identifying the values at stake. These may sound like they're common sense. They are not common sense. It's a major change in your standard operating procedures for most people, the vast majority of people. And totally learnable, and in fact, learnable fairly quickly. So I hope that that's inspiring. You know, these three skills really help you set a virtuous cycle of success. We ran Launch 21 for the first time in January and February. And, you know, it uses concepts that I've been teaching for some years, but it's the first time I put this particular program together. And it was, you know, not everybody got their initiative completed, but the vast, so far, well, I actually have to go in and I need to talk to the people I haven't heard from yet, but I've heard from a ton of people who have either nailed their initiative, knocked it out of the park and done actually two initiatives in the 2 months. People who discovered exactly what they needed to do and are incredibly excited with what they learned and are ready to go on to do the next phase. And I mean, a lot of excitement about what people have learned and how it has really propelled them forward. It is not that hard to learn these skills. Having said that, it's a lot easier to learn from someone else than to try to figure out yourself. I speak from experience here. But basically the three things that you need to do is get the cycle started with an initiative that's set up so that it really supports you. Learn to set the goals so that they motivate you consistently every time you need to bring that long-term goal into something short range that you can do. And then deal with the contradictory motivation when it hits. So I've been sort of talking a mile a minute. That is the conceptual overview. I am hoping this is actually going to help you. I mean, I always want my free calls to be self-contained and valuable. And this is a little bit of an experiment, but I think that having these concepts will help you to think about your initiative. So I'd like to test that out now. You have a handout, it's called Want, Maybe. And this is a very simple exercise, which I think is suitable for us to try for, to kind of set this out. Let me share the screen again. I'm gonna show you a video of me doing this exercise. Okay. So what I did is I wrote at the top what my goal was. And in this particular case, it was actually for this class. I wanted to give a great class. By the way, this is at 20X, and that was my cat who came in and tried to help me in the middle of it when it was going on. So this is a real actual use of this exercise. It actually took me 13 minutes. We're gonna do a shorter version of it. But it starts, let me start over again actually right now. I think that'd be the easiest thing to do. Let me see if I can do that. This seems to be a little bit slow. Here, let's see. I'm sorry, this is a little bit weird here. Okay, we're starting over again. I'm gonna say what I'm doing this time. Okay, so I write at the top my goal, which is to have a great class. And then I answer the question, what do I want? And if you see there, every one of those bullet points, I write, I want, and then I wrote something that I wanted. Like I wanted to really connect with you. I wanted to provide value. I had a whole bunch of things that I wanted to achieve in this class. The second half, which I see I've already gone past, was how do I want to feel? So I wanted to feel confident. I wanted to feel in control. I wanted to feel prepared. There were a whole bunch of things I wanted to feel. That was the second half of that first page. This last page that took most of the time was how might I maybe make that happen? Maybe and might are really important here. You do not have to have a perfect idea. You're basically brainstorming ways. Now that you're clear on what you want and how you want to feel, how maybe might you make that happen? And if you notice, I kept flipping to the previous pages. I'm going to just run it again in the background here. I kept flipping to the previous pages because I was looking to see, well, how am I going to make that happen? How am I going to make that happen? You see, this is where I switched to how do I want to feel, and the cat came in, and then I finished writing how I wanted to feel. So it was a half a page each for what do I want, how do I want to feel, and then it was a whole page of how might I maybe make that happen. Very, very simple exercise, really worth doing. We actually do this in one of the, here, let me stop this. Let me pause this because everything seems to be a little bit slow here. Stop the share. This is actually one of the thought works for one of the daily thought works for Launch 21. But I would like to do this with everyone now. So if you could pull out a piece of paper, this is, as you see, it's a thinking on paper type exercise, although it's not, if you know thinking on paper, it's not really exactly the same thing. And I want you to think, I'm assuming everybody here has a long-term, long-range objective. And so what I would like you to do, let's see, let me get the handout. I'm sorry. I have the handout right here, but it disappeared on me, of course. Yes, it totally disappeared on me. Oh, here it is. It's underneath my script. I apologize. So if you really want to do it on this piece of paper, you can. Stephanie, is there a technical question here?
I have a quick question. I hope it's quick. What if you want to do a want, maybe to decide between two different vying objectives for your initiative? Can you use it for that?
That's not what this is for. That's not what this is for. Use decision cards for that.
Okay. So just pick one and use it for the task.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So this is, you have a goal, write down what your goal is at the top of the page. And then what you're going to do is you're going to write, I want, and make sure you write out, I want, and then write what you want, and then write another one, I want, and what you want. And then again, how do you want to feel? Now, I think I'd like to do a quick version of this. So why don't we do, say, three or four wants and three or four how do I want to feels, and then see if you can think about how might I maybe make this happen. Are there any questions about how to do this exercise? Going once, going twice? Okay. Let's go and try to do this. So right at the top of the page, my goal is, and then want, maybe. And let's see, let's give it about 5 minutes and see if that's enough time for people to reach some closure.
Jean, did you say we should go past the I wants into the feel?
Yeah, go ahead and do it. Do three or four I wants, three or four I want to feels, and then see if you can come up with things, ways you maybe might could make that happen. Good?
Yep.
Good. Oh, one thing I didn't say. If you get a knot in there, like, I don't want such and such, then try to figure out what do you want? Or I don't want to feel such and such, how do you want to feel? Try to switch every negative into a positive.
Quick question.
Yes.
What is the word stem for how might I maybe make that happen? Is there one?
There are three of them there. I might be able to, maybe I could, or I might.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. And I'll say, I see that I made the error. And so I'm going to remind you, when you come up with the ways that you might be able to make it happen, do start the sentence with maybe I could, or I might be able to. Put a maybe or a might in there. It makes it much easier to brainstorm.
Please pause now to do the exercise.
I'm sure that more time would be helpful on this. And I did take that video that I showed you, it took me 13 minutes and we just gave you like 5 minutes here. So you can spend more time on this profitably. But I'd like to talk about how that went. I see, Pete, you have your hand up. Did you have a question or comment on how that went or about what I was talking about? Could you unmute?
No, I was just indicating that I was approaching a close the end of the exercise.
Okay, great. So I would like to hear from some people. You don't have to, Pete, but you know, maybe you want to jump in. I would like to hear from some people whether they got any ideas and whether they have any questions. And this is a great time. If you didn't get ideas, this is also a great time to get help. So I'll just warm it up here. I did this. I actually, right now, I'm doing a slight aside on the book I'm working on. I decided I needed to write down my understanding of motivation. I needed to write just a clear, objective statement of that for my own purposes. And I want to get that done so I can get back to writing the actual book, which is not just a theoretical book. And it was super helpful for me to realize that in doing this, I want to feel curious about what the gaps are. And it's like I completely one of the maybes was maybe I could treat gaps as discoveries. Finding gaps in the theory is actually a really good thing. That would be super helpful for me to keep a constructive perspective. And I had a particular tactic that had not occurred to me to use that I realized would be super helpful for me to do this, which, you know, I've been working on this, but I hadn't used this particular tactic. And so I got some great ideas for how to do this. So I'm curious if anyone else got any ideas or if you would like some help or if you have a question about what I was talking about before. So I think raise your hand if you have a question or comment. Weeda.
Hi. So I guess I got a little stuck.
Okay.
It feels like the long range is maybe too long. My goal is to have a retirement residence.
Okay.
I don't think I want to live in New York. It's just way too expensive here.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about my retirement in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So in 5 years, I want to have a place to retire. I might still work, but I admire how you moved to Florida and it's so beautiful there. And I want to have a plan in place to meet that goal.
Great.
The challenge is I really don't know where I want to go.
Okay, great.
So I had some ideas for trying to figure out where to go.
Yep.
But the barrier, I guess, that I meet is that anywhere I go, I'm not going to have any family around me. And that's a quandary for me because I don't want to just pick up and go and be alone. So I'm single now. And so I'd be going alone, at least right now.
Right. Yeah.
There's so many variables is, I guess, the challenge.
Right. So this is a great example. Like when you think theoretically, okay, I want a retirement home in 5 years. First step, figure out where I'm going to go. Boom. You run into a problem because you've got objections to figuring out a place because there's no family there. So what you need is you need some easier short-term thing that is going to help you deal with what really matters. So like what I actually would suggest in this case is start thinking about what your dream home looks like, right? So like if you like for the next 4 weeks, every day took 15 minutes where you would write about what your dream home's like, what do you do in retirement? Who are you with? You would then start getting a picture of that. And you also would probably start figuring out like the family stuff. What is the family stuff that you would do? It would start becoming clearer to you what that retirement is really going to look like. And the family, I'm sure that family will be a part of it, but maybe it will be like, okay, I'm just making something up here. People down the street from us have this very expensive, it's not a Winnebago, it's some upscale thing. They go around, they drive it to their family. They live here, but they spend a third to half of the year in the driveway of various of their children's houses, right? In this Winnebago. And so if you knew what you wanted to do in your retirement and what would make it wonderful for you, there probably is some creative solution that lets you see family as much as you want and also lets you do what you want in retirement. But first you need to find out what you really want. And so that's what I would say. And the reason this is a good example of a short-term activity you can do, which will be really rewarding because it will be fun to think about how you want it to be, right? It's not going to be upsetting. You're not going to be worried about, well, where will family be if I'm in, you know, if I'm in Oregon, there's no family, what do I do? No, you won't be worrying about that problem. You'll be thinking about what you want. And by spending that time on that, the picture will get bigger, the values will get clearer. And then it's all creative problem solving is done when you see a value you want to get and you figure out a way to get it. And until you're clearer on the values, you can't do the problem solving. If you try to do the problem solving first, you get stuck. Is that helpful?
Yes, very.
Great. Great. Wonderful. Wonderful. Great. It's great to see you. Weedon and I knew each other when I was living in New York, and it's been a while. Great. All right. Great. Michael, did you have a question or want some help?
There we go. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that as I was going through that exercise, I mean, I made good progress on what we were doing, but it actually made me very anxious, and that's common for me.
Okay.
Just thinking about the things I have to do, and there are boring psychological reasons why that's true for me, and I know all about them, but it gets in the way a lot.
Okay, you and everybody else in the universe. If you say the words, I have to, that actually gets in the way. So I don't want to put you on the spot.
Go ahead.
So no, I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to take Pete's question and then I'm going to give you a chance to think whether you want to do this. This is a perfect example of something that we could do the coaching method I was saying with, where we would talk about your feelings about some specific action where there's an, I have to, or, you know, some other baggage is getting in the way. To kind of see a way around that. And I don't want to put you in a position where you are sharing something that's too personal or that you're uncomfortable. So think for a second about whether you'd like to do that here on this group call. Is that okay? Okay. All right. I'm going to take Pete and I'll come back and we can talk in a general way. Even if you don't want to do the coaching, we can talk in a general way. Okay.
Okay.
But I'm going to let you think about that for a second rather than put you totally on the spot. Pete, you had a question or comment? I think you need to unmute.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Yes.
This is a question about something that you said earlier about, and also in the other comments that you made recently about having a single initiative.
Yes.
Do you remember the paradigm of the busy person? If you want something done, ask a busy person. Are you familiar with that?
I've heard that, sure.
And the point being that someone who's busy is already in the process of engaging themselves effectively, mm-hmm. and if they agree to your request, we'll figure out a way to get to it. We'll get to it quickly, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't think that's entirely true, but it's certainly true that if you are on top and goal directed and in control, you look a lot busier than a lot of other people. Yeah. But you can be very busy without actually being on top of it. That both of those things can be true.
Yeah. Yeah. I must say that in my own experience, mm-hmm. that in the times of my life when I was engaged and effective,
yes.
It was easier to get things done. At other times in my life when work wasn't going or work wasn't coming quickly and I was sitting around waiting for the phone to ring, that's when the dirty clothes collected and the house got unkempt and so on and so forth. So I guess the question then is, can I integrate those ideas with have only one initiative?
Okay. So I just want to clarify something, which is, it's not that you have only one goal. You can have a lot of goals you're working on, but you have one initiative, which is pushing your buttons and making, and that is that you're needing to deal with emotionally and grow. So the initiative is the goal that you are actively working on growing and learning how to actually do this. because you do not already have the systems in place to do it. And so, for example, at a time when like work is not coming in, right, there, you really need an initiative of figuring out how to reliably get clients, say, right? And that is actually somewhat demoralizing. I mean, this is everyone who has started a business has had to learn how to sell themselves, and it's not that much fun. I mean, it's actually quite stressful when you first learn it. But maybe this is all revealing too much information about me. But anyway, but that is when you have like a sales process that used to work and now doesn't work, or you know, the economy has changed or whatever, and your livelihood is on the line, that is a very emotional issue. And you need to actually be able to deal with the issues around that in an effective way and do it at a rate that you can sustain. That will actually pull everything forward. This is a case where rising tide raises all boats. If you are actually growing in one area, everything else will be easier, everything else, but it's important that you aren't actually like, if you at the same time that you're trying to figure out the sales in your business or having relationship issues, it's going to be very difficult because you're not going to be able to concentrate. The problems are going to be interconnected. It's going to be difficult to untangle. So the thing that I would say is that when things go well, typically you are being ambitious and you're moving forward and you're actually growing in some area. And that's when the rising tide floats all boats, or you ask a busy person, they can do it, because you've got your priorities very clear. And you can also judge when someone says, would you be willing to do this? Because your priorities are clear, you can also see whether it actually fits in with what you're doing, or whether no way I'm going to do that because that would interfere with, you know, the company or writing the book or whatever the important thing is.
Yeah, so that's the way I would
priorities envision. Clear.
Yeah, that's the way I would envision that. So yes, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I appreciate the answer, which is very clear. One initiative doesn't mean you need to drop other goals.
Right. Right.
Finish
what you were going to say. Mm-hmm.
You become aware of what you want to be your main initiative at this time.
Yes.
And everything else then relates to that.
Right. And like, for example, for me right now, my initiative is working on a schedule. This is something I've been experimenting with, and I'm currently working just on a schedule was too hard for me and created too many problems. So what I'm trying to do now is work in the time block and switch when I'm supposed to switch and not worry if I don't finish what I was supposed to in that time, which is an easier, you see, I actually made it be an easier thing because it was too hard for me and it was causing all kinds of problems. But that's what I'm actually doing the personal growth on. And I'm still working on the book, but the book is now, I'm putting in this many hours a week. And what gets done. So that's something I can do and is not going to push my buttons. Or like the Thinking Lab. I do two new classes a month in the Thinking Lab. I know how much time it takes to do that. That I've done that now for 12 years, 13 years I've been running the Thinking Lab. I come up with a topic a few weeks out. I write a page of notes at the time I come up with a topic. The morning of the class, I work out the script. It takes a few hours. I can absolutely put that on my calendar and not worry about it. I have no stress about that. So the other things that I'm doing, it's not that I'm not doing other things. It's not that I'm actually not doing very interesting new classes in the Thinking Lab, but I'm doing them in a knowing that these are not going to stress me out, that I know exactly when I need to do stuff in order to make sure that it is not a problem. And so those things are all sort of under control. Whereas this trying to work at a particular time, totally not under control and pushing all kinds of buttons. And so, and that I think is going to be very helpful for me. And that's why I made it my initiative.
I see. Did you publish something recently about fluency, or was that someone else?
I don't think I've published something about fluency.
Okay,
I just was talking with my husband that fluency is organization.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the theme of the article. Someone was writing about. I remember now. The issue was: do you learn something by understanding it, or do you have to practice it? And and what the writer was saying is, well, you have to do both.
Yeah.
You of course you need to understand the topic, but you only master the topic when it becomes fluent,
when you use it.
Develop fluency in
right.
it. And so I'm thinking about that and listening to what you're saying.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking at the point where you develop fluency in something because you've done it so often and you've got it down to a process. That's right. when you can say, okay, this is fine. I can put this aside and now work on developing fluency in this new area.
Right. Or, and a couple of things, and one, pretty much any goal you have, you can find the long-term goal. You can find the fluent short-term way to do it. That's part of what planned evolution is. And, okay. you know, this is also an issue of setting an objective standard. If you need to be able to do this, whatever project is, in 4 hours, you need to be able to set a standard that is appropriate. So you're pretty much guaranteed to get it done in 4 hours.
Okay.
And being able to do that without, you know, having a conniption fit because it's not quote unquote perfect, you know, that there could be emotional issues in learning that. But once you learn that, you can do that in anything.
Or just learn that you can do it.
Yes, exactly. Right. So yeah. all these things, it's all learnable skills. And you kind of, I think of it as spinning up plates. You spin up a plate and once it's going, you can spin up another plate. But there are actually a limit to how many plates you can spin at one time. So you have to choose your plates. Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Pete. And Michael, if you want to get that coaching, raise your hand again. I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm very cautious about that, but it would be great if you did. Glenn, did you have a question or comment? I think you need to unmute, Glenn. Should be at the bottom left of your screen, or I think probably unless the...
Mute.
Yes, there you are.
Oh, okay. I like this. It's very good. What you said on volition a little bit back is very good. During this COVID time, and it relates some to what Pete was talking about also, I was teaching 25 private students a week, and it seemed like, and my major goal, I'm working on writing an orchestral work for trombone and orchestra,
mm-hmm.
which is a big deal. I mean, it's no little thing. It's hard. And right. I've done a lot of writing and gotten it done. But it seems like I got more done when I was teaching. Now I feel like I need somebody to smack me in the face when I get up in the morning and get that volition going, which I know I have to do it.
Well, so this is really important. I think this is a great example of how when you don't have the motivation, you need to actually go see what's going on. And it sounds to me like you're actually, you know, part of the issue with values is you have a lot of values and you want to pursue them all. And one of your values, I'm guessing, is teaching and or interaction with lively students, right? That I bet you, I know you, Glenn, you love teaching, don't you?
Well, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Now the teaching I've been doing, a year ago got cut off because of the COVID, because I go into the schools and teach.
Yeah, I understand. But
it all stopped. So,
hold on.
It wasn't really my great love, okay? It was just something to do to make extra money.
But hold on. There's something about it that you're missing. Right? And I don't know. So I'm not going to prejudge that it was the teaching. But what you need to be able to do when you don't feel like working on the composition, you need to be able to introspect all your emotions. And find out what is going on right now. Now, maybe it's just a little hump and a little tactic to get over the hump. Because often sometimes just saying, well, you know, I don't really feel like it, but I would be willing to do it. Let me just see how it goes. And you get into it and it's no problem. Other times you find actually you really don't want to, you're missing something. And that, like, for example, maybe you're lonely and maybe actually in COVID, this has been a problem for a lot of people, a lot of isolation. And it could be that, in fact, your need for connection with other people is big enough that is like this need in the background that you need to meet in order to be able to turn your attention to composition. And you only find that out through an introspective process. It's not, there's no a priori conclusion about what that is. And you know, I made the guess that it was you missed teaching. I completely accept you're the person who needs to figure this out. I can't figure this out for you. Well, but that's what the introspective techniques help you with.
I think the teaching actually helped me organize my time. And so it left spaces for me to write, maybe. I don't know.
So then maybe some other project would actually help you organize your time.
Right.
Because that means maybe you could, you know, become a virtual Boy Scout leader. I'm just making something up here, right? That would give structure to your day, and then boom, maybe that's what you need. This is all completely individual. And that's why you need the skill to be able to see what's going on in my mind right now. What am I getting pulled? What am I missing? That's how you'll then find the creative solution to that problem. Good?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good. Great, Glenn. Hey, I see Michael's hand is up, so we're going to do some coaching with him. I might have put someone else's hand down by accident. I was trying to put a hand down, and I think I put someone else's hand down. So, Michael, would you like to unmute? So, would you tell us about, tell me a little bit about the situation that, you know, you've got the I have to about. Just tell me a little bit about it.
It's not really an I have to thing.
All right? Okay, good. And just tell me in your words.
Shortest possible version, going back as far as I can possibly remember, and I'm talking, you know, like 3 years old, I learned from my parents that succeeding at something or being proud of succeeding at that thing means punishment.
Okay.
That's one of
my deepest, it's in there really, really deep. It's there all the time. And I have never found a way to overcome it. And when I do things like this, I start to feel anxious about it. And it really gets in the way when I'm trying to get things done.
I hear that. I hear that when you have that thought, success means punishment. I can totally get that you would be appalled at the idea of success. So can you give me an example of a specific time that this has happened? This has come up recently, some specific project you wanted to work on that, boom, this came up?
Probably the simplest one, and it's kind of ongoing, is that my house is a mess.
Okay, great.
And it's not dirty. It's just very, very untidy.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that.
Okay.
And I can't get myself to fix it.
Okay. So is that something like, I mean, today, did you look at something and think you should tidy and not want to tidy? Is that, we want a little scenario.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me a scenario from today.
Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. I mean, you know, I walk past, for example, my dining room table.
It's dining room table. Mm-hmm.
And every time I look at it, I think, yeah, I got to take care of that. And but then I immediately think, oh, it's so much to do. Okay. I'm not gonna be able to get it done all at once. So I'll just do it when I have more time or feel more like doing it or like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So let's just make a distinction here between the facts, which is that the dining table has some stuff on it, right?
Yep.
Would you agree? That's like anybody who looked at your dining room table would see there's stuff on the dining room table, right?
Right.
Versus like, I'm not going to have enough time to get it done. I shouldn't do it now. These are all evaluations you have about the situation, or I should do it now, or I hate this. Those are all your evaluations of the situation. Does that make sense?
Yep.
It's really important to distinguish the objective fact from the thoughts you're having about it. Because the fact that there's stuff on there, that's like metaphysically given. But what goes on in your head, you can actually turn your attention. You can actually change what goes on in your head. So let's just think about this dining room table that's got a bunch of stuff on it. Why is that a problem?
Well, that's the thing. There's not really any consequences for me having it that way. Not any negative consequences, except that I don't like it that way. You know, there are some things on there that I will need to use at some point or another, and it's going to be, I'm going to wonder where they are, and, you know, it's that kind of thing, but.
Okay. So, I'm just curious here. You're looking at the dining room table. You say there aren't any negative consequences. How does that make you feel?
Um, Well, I guess this is a sort of on the I have to line. I feel like I should be keeping the place neater than it is. And it gets in the way of, it discourages me, you know, and it just weighs on me. If it wasn't like this, I would have more mental energy to do other things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I'm hearing a bunch of different thoughts about this. One is there aren't any negative consequences, but then you actually told me some negative consequences, that if there weren't there, you would have more energy for other things. So you have less energy. So that's one thing I heard. Another thing I heard is I should keep it neater. I think that's a great thought to go check, because it's amazing what should statements, you could make an argument that this is true, but it's amazing what a should statement can do to your psychology. So let's just look at it. You look at the dining room table, there's stuff on the dining room table. You say to yourself, I should keep it neater. How do you feel? When you say, I should keep it neater, how do you feel?
Discouraged, discouraged, a little anxious.
Mm-hmm. And what are the kind of actions that you take when you're feeling discouraged? I mean, what does that motivate you to do?
Well, in a case like this, it's to get away mentally and physically from the thing that's causing that.
Right. Avoid it. So there are all different kinds of ways. So you can leave the room. My favorite is eat potato chips. I don't know what your favorite way of getting away from things is. Okay. What other things do you do? I actually heard from earlier, think about how this is a product of, you know, childhood issues, right? You can also go into your head, right?
Yep.
What don't you do when you're feeling discouraged because you say, I think I should keep it neater, but you're feeling discouraged? What don't you do?
Well, I don't do the thing that's
right
that would fix that problem.
Right. You don't actually keep it neater, right?
Right.
So this is, you see that this is an absolute causal process. When your thought about the dining room table is, I should keep it neater, that absolutely causes the emotion of discouraged, right? Because it's, you know, it's a failure of some kind of your part. So discouragement, that's the emotion that follows when you make that evaluation.
Yeah, that also brings punishment, you see.
Right. It's actually, so interestingly, so because you're feeling discouraged, so that makes you want to avoid it. It makes you not actually do the action. It makes you actually concerned about what the whole process is. And the effect is you're actually ensuring that you don't keep it neater. You're going to keep it in a state where it's actually going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You see that?
Yeah.
So this is what's so interesting. You know, there's a lot of hokum pokum about positive thinking that is really annoying. Okay. That says, oh, you should just affirm, I can have a clean house. I could go to sleep telling yourself I can have a clean house. But here's the truth of it. It is true. The thoughts that you focus on do in fact motivate a certain kind of feeling, which does motivate a certain kind of action. And this particular thought, I should keep it neater, is activating a kind of motivation by fear context. And that's why it all seems so inevitable, because it's all based on, oh, this is something bad I should avoid. It's all a problem. Now here, let's now switch from this. Instead of having a motivation by fear context, let's see what the motivation by value context might be. So if you were to clear the table, what would be some of the great things that would happen as a result of that?
I'd be that much closer to having everything straightened up.
Okay, but what's the benefit of having everything straightened up?
It wouldn't weigh on my mind anymore, which is why I'd have the more mental energy for other things.
Okay.
This is something that Marie Kondo talks about in her book.
Right. So let's distinguish these two things. It wouldn't weigh on my mind. That's motivation by fear, avoiding a negative. right. versus I would have energy for other things.
Right.
That's positive. So give me one thing. If you had the dining table cleared, what's one thing you'd have more energy for? And let's just keep it at the dining table.
That's really a hard question.
Like imagine you had, I'm just making this up. Suppose the dining table were clear. You're coming, you're looking at your clear dining table. What are you thinking? What opportunities do you have there?
I can use it.
What would you use it for?
Dinner.
So you could have a beautiful dinner, right? You could set a really nice dinner. Do you like that kind of thing? Do you like having a really nicely set table with?
I love to cook. So yeah.
So you could have your dinner could actually, you could make a nice meal for yourself and you could make it be as beautifully laid out as it is delicious to eat. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that this is what you should set as a goal, but you see, if you looked at the dining table and said, gee, if I cleared that, I could have a beautiful dinner here on this table. And you said, I could have a beautiful dinner on this table. How do you think you would feel?
I'd be very happy about it.
So kind of excited at that possibility, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think you'd do if you were feeling excited?
Well, the first thing I would do is make and have dinner at the table.
Okay, so but you would clear the table, right? I mean, you're looking at the, if you're looking at the table with stuff on it, you say, I could have a clear table for dinner.
Yep.
And you feel excited. You clear the table, make a nice dinner, enjoy the dinner.
Oh, right? Yeah, right.
And in fact, this positive value-based thought actually sets up a virtuous cycle that helps create the thought because it sets up the motivation for taking the actions to actually make the thought come true. So the thing I'd like to really offer for you, Michael, this is a learnable skill. This is called the self-coaching model. This is a learnable skill, and it provides a real opportunity to let go of old baggage, because one of the things that actually makes old baggage stay in is the thought, oh no, I have this old baggage and it's still undercutting me. And the truth is, every thought is a new thought. And in fact, you can learn how to kind of shift this context. Say, oh yeah, that's that baggage. I see, that's activating a motivation by fear context. Let me see if I can find the values here. Activate a motivation by values context and get the motivation to do something. And then of course, every time you do things that strengthens your values, that strengthens your confidence, you know, there are multiple levels that you can do this, but what I'm really hoping to give you some hope for is there's actually a fairly simple transition that you can make now. You are not a slave of your past programming. And this is, you really do have free will, which is not to inculcate guilt, right? This is to inculcate hope that there really is something you can do. Yeah, okay. You know, this stuff comes up, it's worth doing things to try to put the past to bed, but it's really empowering to realize that you can still have the past doing its crazy stuff, and yet here in the present, you can clear the table and have a wonderful meal at the table. And that, I think, is breaking that, so much therapy, or people, when they think about therapy, it's about, oh, I have these problems, I've got this problems in my mind. Oh, I have to fix my mind. I think that actually contributes to the problems. I think that whole view of therapy actually contributes to the problems. So I hope I'm giving you some hope that.
That's very similar to something I did learn in therapy and that I've used to overcome a lot of other problems is being aware of what's happening and then sort of reframing it like you're describing here.
Yes. Right. And reframing I totally agree with that. And what I say is this is a very specific process that can help, particularly when you've got, you know, old thoughts, self-defeating beliefs, basically, that get in your way.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Great. All right. Great. Thank you for being willing to do an example. I really appreciate that.
Sure, of course.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Great. Now I have a question from, I don't see your name, but you're up there with your hand raised. It says iPhone guest. So if you would unmute.
Hi, Jean. I think that's me. My name is Mike also.
Hi, Mike. Okay, great.
Great to finally meet you. I think we've corresponded by email once or twice over the years, and I really appreciate your work, and I get a lot of value out of it. So I've got a few things, a couple just short 2-second answers, and then one serious question.
Okay, great.
First of all, estimate on when the book's coming out.
Oh, God.
Not to pressure you or put you on the spot, but.
Yeah, so I thought this year, and then a couple of weeks ago, I thought it could be another 10 years. I don't think it's going to be another 10 years, but it's.
Is it going to be kind of a compendium of all your tactics and strategies, or is that?
No. So I could, there is, the Thinker's Toolkit is available for sale on my website, which has like the 10 that I recommend the most. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the time. These are like the 10 fundamental tactics you need. And so that's available on the website. Was it you who emailed about this just in the last week?
I think I did. Yeah.
Okay. Because yeah. You know, maybe at some point, I mean, there is in the Thinking Lab library, it's something like 60 tactics that are written up. There was a tactic that was like want maybe, which is actually written up in a longer form on the Thinking Lab site, or the one that I put out last week. So maybe sometime I will put that into a book form, but what I'm trying to write is a book. And this is part of the problem, but my actual interest is learning how to write objectively on difficult topics in an essentialized way. And so I'm not really interested in putting out a compendium of a bunch of things. I'm interested in writing an integrated book that it will actually be read by like technical managers, I think is the ideal audience for my stuff. And this is what I personally want to be able to do. So I don't really want to put out a book that is an okay book. I want to write a book that is really actually very clear on all the things I want to see and motivating. And that turns out to have been a challenge. And the development I've gone through is learning how to write objectively. And I can now write, you know, a 2000 word essay objectively, but, and what I'm learning is how do you write a 40,000 word book objectively. And I've made a lot of progress on that. And I found that I wasn't as far ahead as I thought I was about 2 weeks ago. So I don't know how to answer that, but this will happen. It will happen.
So we're going to have to wait a while. And if you get too impatient, go to the Thinking Lab. That's what I'm hearing.
Right.
Can I offer? Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
There's lots of great written material in the Thinking Lab. Mm-hmm.
This wasn't originally part of my own question, but can I offer my 2 cents in regard to the previous gentleman's questions and topic?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to give advice. Are you talking advice?
Advice, just sharing thoughts, I guess. I mean, I don't have to. I was just going to say that, you know, it was something like clearing the table, because his topic was something I thought a lot about, you know, oftentimes. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the idea of Kaizen, you know, just taking the smallest step possible you can, you know. So in his case, clear one thing off the table and that's a victory. Get some momentum, you know, and keep going.
So small steps are, I mean, there's a lot of advice out there. Take a small step. And that is necessary, but not sufficient.
Sure.
So one of the things that I personally found very frustrating and Michael may also find frustrating is people give you this advice that sounds very logical. But then when you go to implement it, you run into this motivational issue, like a total resistance. He actually knows where his resistance comes from. It comes from mm-hmm. having been punished every time he did something successfully. And it's real. And so it's not enough to just see logically what needs to be done. You need to be able to handle the motivational issues that come up. And the good news is that there are just a few motivational issues. And the thing about the small steps, this is ultimately what you're doing is you're taking small steps that get results that then motivate you to take more steps. And the trick is being able to figure out the steps that you actually can take and are willing to take and that in fact satisfy you. So the fact you can do it and you can complete it isn't enough if it doesn't satisfy you. Mm-hmm. And the fact that logically, if you did it, you would be satisfied. If you can't, if you have like some block over it, it's not good enough. So it's navigating those motivational issues is how you get the virtuous cycle going. And that requires really being tuning in to your exact situation and not, you know, this is where, you know, an armchair, this is consulting, like giving advice, it can be really helpful and it can be helpful. Like the reason I suggested the issue of, or actually he really suggested dinner, but I suggested then have a beautiful dinner on the table. That was to visualize the kind of thing it could be. But what he actually should do, he needs to figure out something that is really motivating to him. And that is the real secret. Mm-hmm. Small steps, absolutely. But what step? Needs to be a step that really works for you motivationally. And that's the part that people get stuck on.
Yeah, you mentioned the shoulds, and this is another one of the 2-second answers. This is not the crux of what I'm asking, but are you a fan of like Albert Ellis and the shoulds or Karen Hardy? I mean, is that an influence, or are you coming at it from somewhere else?
Well, I'm in favor of should. So here's what should means. Should, when you read the word should, that should mean, based on everything I know, taking this action would actually be the absolute best for me and lead to the most happiness possible, right? That's what should ought to mean. That's not always what it means for us. It often means an out of context, you have to do this or else you're no damn good. So right. I usually use have to, like for me, have to is the giveaway that I'm on this. You have to do this or you're no damn good, which is clearly motivation by fear. Whereas the proper use of should, the proper use of should is a moral thing. We actually need that word. We need a one syllable word for, my God, this would be the absolute thing that would be in my best interest and lead to the most happiness. But most people don't have should automatized that way. They have it should automatized as have to or else you're no damn good. And so This is again, a case where the benefit of that little exercise that I went through with the other Michael, what we did is we got the circumstance separated from the thought. We got a thought, we saw what feeling it led to. Then we saw how the feeling motivated the action and that created a result that reinforced the thought. What feelings you have from the thought, that will be based on what, like if you have should as a have to, you're gonna have motivation by fear as your emotion coming from that thing of I should clean up the dining table. And so the proof is in the pudding there. It's not, you can't just say, I should clean up the dining table. Oh, that means it would be in my best interest to clear up the dining table. This will be a wonderful thing. The test is, what emotion do you have when you think that thought? And that is going to tell you what context it's activating and what its real meaning to you is. And that's what really matters for motivating yourself, is you need to be very in touch with what context is actually getting motivated. Because because there are situations like for me, like the thing I use is, this is reason, right? Like in certain situations I can say, wow, it really would be the rational thing to do here would be to clean the table. And you know, that is a commitment on my part to reason. And that can actually motivate desire in me. But the test is, does it, a proper value-based motivation will motivate desire. And there's a lot of work you can do conceptually, but as far as action is concerned, the proof is in the actual, whether you feel desire or aversion, that's the actual proof of whether you've gotten motivation by values or not.
Very interesting. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. You know, just, you know, having dealt with some of the same issues that he was describing, you know, I know sometimes that no matter how good the reasoning is, the emotions don't always line up.
Right. They don't.
And it's, how am I going to get myself to take that action, even though I know it's the right thing to do, you know, intellectually, but I don't feel it. And hours on it.
Well, that's what the Do What Matters Most class is about, because in that situation, you really need to be able to give yourself permission to feel what you feel and understand what you feel, because the feelings that you have are actual, what an emotion is it's an alert that there is some value at stake or some value threatened. And if you are feeling conflict over that, it's really important to find what that other value is that's at stake and to get that out there and into the discussion. And sometimes that totally resolves it. Sometimes that makes you realize the thing you thought you were supposed to do isn't the thing you're supposed to do. And then sometimes you realize you're in a kind of never-never land where you actually are not in touch with your values. And there, I think it's very important to experiment very consciously, saying, you know what, I'm going to experiment doing this, even though I don't feel like doing it, because I really want to try to understand what are the values here. And I know that taking a step is going to reveal more feelings. This is not going to be comfortable, but I'm going to take this step anyway. And that is something that you do. The value you call on for that is your own self-improvement or your own desire to break this loose, or, you know, it's really back at the meta level where you say, I'm going to do this even though it's uncomfortable and I'm not motivated. And the reason I'm doing it.
Jean, looks like you're frozen. So I'm going to talk a little bit while Jean figures out what to do. I'm Lynn, and I work with Jean. And one of the things that is very exciting about Launch 21.
Lynn, over. Yeah.
One of the things that's very exciting about Launch 21 is that there are two. We just went 30 minutes with coaching of Michael and answering the various questions. And one of the great things about Launch 21 is there are two coaching sessions that are an hour long each that are a part of that program every week. There are two sessions. And so you can get your questions answered, get coaching, figure out what's stopping you, what's and what gets you going, and keep moving and making progress in all of your initiatives. So I just want to make that little pitch right now. Because Jean couldn't.
Half an hour?
Thanks, Lynn.
Yes.
Oh, I apologize for that.
Oh, no, there's nothing to apologize for. Absolutely not. We learned lots of great things. It was an excellent. I loved listening to what happened in the questions and the coaching and everything. I thought it was great. And most people have stayed. There's still a lot of people that are here, 30 people. Right. So, okay, Jean, I'm sorry. You can take back the stage.
No, thank you for taking over. I think that whatever's going on at my end has fixed. And I just wanted to say, I actually wanted to have a real example, and it was great that you were willing to do that, Michael. I think it was super helpful for everyone. So I must have gotten cut off in the middle of my answer to Mike. And do you know where we lost it, or should I just figure that's water over the dam at this point?
I think that's water over the dam.
Okay, great. So the one other thing, I see a question. What is the format of Do What Matters Most? It is an audio course, although it's now going into the Thinking Lab. It's actually, the page is not up yet, but it should be up in the next day or two, where there will also be you'll be able to access the video version of it, but it's a recorded class is what it is. It's a 6-hour class, and then there are about 4 hours of additional units. So, and it's part of Launch 21 actually recommends people go through that whole thing, but you can also go through it yourself if you're just in the Thinking Lab. Hey, Randy, you had a question or comment?
Yes. So from the want maybe activity, and I think I know what you're going to say, but from my maybes, I loved it. The wants helped clarify things for me. Then I have maybes, and I basically have two maybes for accomplishing my goal. Two main paths I could go down. My goal is to build my business to a certain revenue level, and there's basically, I could go focus more on the service route, which is more like immediate, or I could go the product e-commerce route. And so I wonder what you would recommend for like choosing between the two.
Well, one thing I would say is I think you need a lot more maybes, right? Like, for example, it's not clear to me that, I don't know. I totally don't know, Randy. Are you ready to make that decision? It's not clear to me that you're ready to make that decision. And yet I bet there are ways to start making a lot more money in what you're doing right now. So there are probably 10 other ways that you could maybe make more money in your business as it is now. And so I would definitely get a long list for this. If it really is a strategic question that at some point you think you're ready to make a strategic decision, Randy is in the Thinking Lab, so I'm just going to tell him that the decision cards method, which is in unit one of Do What Matters Most, is a method for figuring out which is the best option. It's not 100% clear to me you're ready to make that decision, but that is a great method. If you're ready to make a decision and you just have two things, it's a great way to do it. And you know what? It might be helpful to try to do it. And what will happen is you will see what you don't know, because as you try to put down the pros and cons, it will actually become clear that you don't know the pros and cons. And then that will obviously make it clearer what kind of issues there are. I see. Is that good? Is that sufficient for now?
Yeah, that's helpful.
Okay, great. Terrific. I also got a direct message wanting to know more about the Thinking Lab. So the Thinking Lab is a membership program that includes every month there are two new classes. So like, what are the classes next month? Let's see if I can look up the classes for next month. Let's see. How do I do that quickly? They were in the last newsletter. I can look in the last newsletter. That's always a quick way to do it. Let's see. So in the two in next month are Emotions and Values 201. So Emotions and Values 101 is part of the freebie you get, the Thinking Direction Starter Kit on my site, which I recommend you get. And this is 201, How to Process Emotions, which I think is a really important skill. And then the other one, so it's emotions is the theme for March, Living with Old Baggage. How do you actually deal with old baggage and make sure it doesn't hold you back? That's related to the kinds of things we were talking about with Michael. So there are always two new classes every month. There's always at least one Q&A, either an hour Q&A or a thinking day. Saturday is thinking day. And the idea is I'm on the bridge for 4 hours to answer questions and give attaboys and attagirls and whatever you want. And what people do is they plan what they're going to work on that day. So they basically plan a work day. Some of them will plan to go through a course in the Thinking Lab. Some of them will have, people do all kinds of things on that day. But some of them will come in just to get kind of, I'm going to do this. And they want to be able to say, I'm going to do this. And then at the end of the day, come in and say, this is what I did. And everybody says, attaboy, attagirl. They just want the celebration. Other people have a bunch of questions. They store them up and they ask me and I just answer question after question after question. The other thing that happens on Thinking Day is that's when I start one of the launches. So a lot of people are figuring out what their initiative is. So there's a lot of discussion about how to figure out, given your long-term goal, what should your initiative be for this next month, which is what I have people do in the Launch 21 program. But that Thinking Day is open to everyone in the Thinking Lab. The launch is like an add-on to it in addition to, and then the other thing in the Thinking Lab is there are, I think it's up to like 18 self-study courses available. These are all the courses I've developed over the last 12 years. And there are things like Do What Matters Most, Tap Your Own Brilliance, Smarter Execution, how to define a central purpose. There are ones on precision skills. So there's condensation, concretization, definitions. There are things on planned evolution, just-in-time planning, goal setting. There's some other things that are just emotion, how to gain objectivity about emotions. There are a lot of different courses that I've developed over the years. Nonfiction writing, the stuff on rationally connected conversations, which I developed a few years ago, there's material on that. So those are all available to go through at your own pace. And you can ask questions about them on Thinking Day or in any open Q&A. And then there's also a library of thinking tactics. There's, I think it's up to 60 now, where there are tactics that are written up, like thinking on paper, like want, maybe, like if you know complaining, or if you know introspection 101, or there are just, I've been making tactics for 13 years now, and it's become quite a list. And those are available in a library all organized by category. So if you're looking for a tactic, you can pull that up. And that's available to everyone in the Thinking Lab. What Launch 21 does is you get 2 months in the Thinking Lab as part of Launch 21, but you also get this structure. It's an 8-week program. We're going to kick it off with figuring out your initiative on a thinking day. We'll have the two coaching calls every week. Every day you'll have thought work that will help you stay on your initiative. And then by the end, we'll celebrate. And so that is just a very structured way. You can do the at your own pace version of that in the Thinking Lab in the sense that all the materials are in the Thinking Lab for doing that, but you don't get the coaching calls and you don't get the daily emails. That's what Launch adds to the Thinking Lab. So I hope that that's helpful for those who are asking about that.
But if you want to go at your own pace, you can also that and then
have coaching.
And then have coaching.
Yes. So Lynn is the Thinking Lab coach. And she's an excellent coach. We have like 15 different people who have been going through coaching in the last 6 to 9 months. Is that right, Lynn?
Yes.
And they've been having tremendous success. And typically they have two coaching sessions a month. and they get Lynn's guidance and support, and it's been working incredibly well. If I do say so for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. The cost of coaching. So the Thinking Lab is $75 a month, and the coaching is, I believe it's $75 a month if it's one and $135 if it's two. Is that right? Is that right, Lynn? Okay.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
In addition to the Thinking Lab. So that coaching uses Thinking Lab resources. So that's, you need to be a member of the Thinking Lab to get this coaching that we're talking about right here. Okay. Any other questions or comments before we close? Or actually, Lynn, I haven't, did you have something you wanted to add?
No, I put in my 2 cents worth while you were, while the machine had you offline. So.
Right, while I was incommunicado. Okay, great.
It's a great session tonight. And there are lots of comments in the chat about, from the people who left about that they really enjoyed it tonight. And it was a really good session, Jean.
Thanks. Kudos. Okay, great. Great, terrific. All right, and we ran 2 hours. Wow, this may be a record, actually.
I think it is a record.
Yes. Yep. All right, great. Well, so thank you guys all. So 25 people stayed on till the end. Thank you very much for doing that. And thank you for coming. And I'm available by email. So if you have a question, follow up. And I look forward, some of you, I will eventually, either this week or later, lure you into the Thinking Lab or the launch program. And I look forward to working with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Very good.
Thanks, Jean. Good.
Thanks, Michael, for sharing.
Yes, thank you, Michael. That was wonderful. Your willingness.
I was afraid I was going to bore everybody. But okay.